So here's the situation. I'm trying to avoid a maximum number of people while doing laundry. So I've been doing laundry during the week, but that doesn't really jibe with my normal schedule. So where I'm at now is I'm down to two pairs of underwear, both of which I purchased in Japan. And in Japan, the sizes are different. So these underwear do not fit.
Okay.
Oh, man, Russ.
I am just all over the place.
Russ,
I knew things
are
hard up there, but I had no idea.
Russ, I hate thinking about where the underwear goes on you.
You know, it basically goes everywhere.
I like to imagine that it's not that they're too small, it's that they're so big that you have built a canopy in which you live now. Just
yeah, it's more of a
no
poncho, to be honest, but yeah, that's the dream, is a canopy.
Oh, wait a minute, Russ, I thought that was a Papasan chair. No, you've
get out of there,
woven
Russ.
your giant underwear.
We can see you.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best virtual game of the week.
My name is Chris Flynn, and I can't remember me.
My name is Russ Freshick, and I know the best game of the week that no one's ever going to play.
Welcome to the Besties, where we celebrate the latest and greatest in electronic interactive entertainment. It is a game of the year show that goes all year round. It is a book club, but for video games.
Game of the Year meets King of the Hill. I don't know who came up with that, but I kind of like it.
It's the
same
shit.
Game of the Year meets King of the Hill is good, except it is a descriptor of the show we did 2 years ago, not this one at all.
Yeah, well, but it also doesn't matter.
I don't even know why I say Game of the Year. I mean, it doesn't matter. We don't compete. The games don't compete.
They do eventually.
Maybe.
Maybe, who knows?
Can you imagine if more book clubs operated like this? How nasty it would get in the neighborhood?
Join this club is better than fried green tomatoes. Fight me.
Calling this episode a book club also feels wildly disingenuous, because we invite you to play the games along with us. And in the case of Half-Life Alyx, we're essentially saying, like, hey, you've got like $4,500, right? Hey, you guys have like $2,600 to drop on the tech required to join us in this virtual environ, yes?
Even if you have the money right now, there's no guarantee that you can play the game that we're talking about this week, because the gear is sold out everywhere.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, so speaking of gear, so we're going to talk about Half-Life Alyx. To frame this discussion, real quick, let's go around the horn. What setup, hardware setup were you using?
I'm using a Quest that I'm using the Oculus Link on, which works and has worked shockingly well. I built like a new sort of top of the line PC in January, and since then, like,
so it's outdated.
No. Yeah, it's already outdated. But no, since then, like, it works better than like when I had the like Vive Pro, like whatever. I forget. I've had so many fucking headsets at this point. It is the best feeling one I've had so far, and I think it's just by virtue of the like PC it is connected into.
And so you're basically, just so people are aware, the Quest can be connected via USB. That's what the Oculus Link is to, right, like any desktop, even though it traditionally is used for like a mobile wireless experience. If you're playing a hardcore game, you can wire it up.
No joke, like I get like a GPU warning every time I start up the game. It's like, hey, just a heads up, you might this might affect things, but it is fucking butter smooth. Yeah, no
I
latency.
Think it might be looking at like the hardware on the Quest or something, because I get the same alert every time.
So
I start
you're
the
on
game.
The same setup, Juice.
I am on the same setup. Only weird hiccup I've had with it is that and this is very specific, but the Quest maps my position wherever I plug it in initially, and I can't update my position in the room. So it thinks that the center of my play space is like basically right in front of my computer where I have plugged the headset in.
You have to go through like the Steam VR app preferences. I had to do it once, and it's like very arcane, and I can talk you through it. But
with just the regular Oculus Quest, you just hold in the Oculus button and it automatically resets around you. So it's wild. Once you're in the game, it doesn't matter that much, except I'm afraid to walk around because I'm like standing right next to my computer. But yes, that is my setup.
I'm on an OG Oculus Rift. I borrowed the Oculus Quest, but I do not have the USB cable for it, so I am using an OG Oculus Rift.
And I'm using an original Oculus Rift with a completely unrealistic GTX 2080 Ti and a top-of-the-line Intel CPU.
Does the original Oculus Rift know what to do with that?
It surprisingly, once you get it to work, it took me probably 3 hours to get the Oculus set up. So here's a fun thing that I did not understand. Griffin very generously loaned me an Oculus Quest to like play around with, and I've like really enjoyed it. Oculus Quest uses Oculus Touch controllers. So does the Oculus Rift, right?
Yeah.
Except they don't work interchangeably.
Oh, yeah. No, I knew that.
I did not know that. So I was trying to pair my one set of Oculus Touch controllers versus the other, and it was a nightmare.
Listen, man, we're hanging with the console cowboys in cyberspace right now. This is top of the line tech shit. It's gonna you gotta be real dialed in.
I will
web.
Say this, if you are not a dummy, it takes about 10 minutes to set up. With that same it was not hard to set up with an Oculus.
I'm going
to
give
OG.
I'm going to give a real quick summary of what this game is.
Yes.
Half-Life
please.
Alyx is a prequel of sorts to Half-Life 2. It stars Alyx, you play as her. She was Alyx Vance. She was the AI controlled partner character in Half-Life 2. People probably forget this. At the time, having a character that followed you around the game and like it behaved mildly like a human was revolutionary.
And not a pain in the ass. I remember like people made a big deal about the fact that like, oh, you had a companion, but everyone had played these games where you had to like shove this companion through doors and like they were totally weak and pointless. But here, she was like a real asset. Like she was actually like character building, but also like helpful in fighting and all that stuff.
Am I correct in remembering that she would like find ammo and toss it to you, or am I thinking? You know what?
I'm thinking of Bioshock.
Bioshock. Yeah.
I honestly think that there's a few like. I think that context is going to be really important for this episode. I think the context discussing Half-Life Alyx, like that conversation, has to be framed by a few other things, and I think one of the big ones is understanding like just how much Half-Life 2 kind of innovated in the shooter space, the 3D like video game space, the like sort of quintessential, like if you missed out on that moment, like the quintessential moment of the Combine soldier knocking a can over and then you have to bend down and pick up that can and throw it away in the garbage bin. And like that being a sort of revelation of the physics engine in this game and just how much shit you can do with it. Like, there's so much stuff that Half-Life 2 did that informed literally every other 3D shooter that came after it.
The importance of what Griffin's talking about is like a double whammy of, one, yes, physics in a shooter, or physics really in any game, but also mundane physics. Yeah. So up until this point, it was like, yeah, we have physics objects, they're red barrels, and they're like limp bodies.
Or it's like a jumping pad.
Yeah, the hook with Half-Life was something as mundane as having to throw the trash away is now possible. And where that goes in VR now is you walk into junky office, you know, rooms, and you can open every filing cabinet. You can look inside of trash cans. There is a lot of supposedly meaningless physics that you can do in this game. And I think what is like so special about that is it feels like a lived in world, right? Like we're so
just
many
put
games.
A trash can on your head.
Yeah, of course.
Hell yeah. I put a traffic cone on my head the second
time. So funny.
I have a few qualms with this game as like a VR thing, but I was not disappointed by the number of times that like I saw a hard hat sitting on the ground. I picked it up and I was like, oh, I'm just going to put this on my head. And it goes right on your head. Or there's like a rebreather like sitting on the ground. I'm like, I wonder if I can put this on. And like I just put it close to my face and it stayed there. I was like, oh, okay, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
It did not have any sort of mechanical. I thought if I have a hard hat on my head, headcrab shouldn't be able to. I should be good, right?
We chat about these games a little bit in the ramp up to the episode, but try to save the bulk of our discussions. But we have had some like glancing talks about this game, and it seems there's a little bit of a split with Russ and Plant kind of digging it, and Griffin and I sort of maybe less digging it. So before we get into less digging, I'd love to hear from Plant and Freshstick about like, maybe start with Fresh because we heard from Plant, like about what worked for you about this experience.
So let me start by saying I am well aware, I mean, for the people that are still listening that are interested in Half-Life, I am well aware that like the Half-Life moment has long since passed. There was a moment about 10 years ago when everyone was super jazzed about Half-Life as a franchise, and the bulk of the, I mean, I wouldn't say the majority of the world, but a lot of the people that play video games are folks that have no affinity for Half-Life. I'm an older gentleman. I'm getting up there in my days. And I
a distinguished
gentleman smoking
pipes.
Are
you talking about Half-Life, or are you going to take us down a long walk down an autumnal path as the leaves
But I care. I like genuinely adored the original Half-Life. Half-Life 2, when it launched with Steam. Like, that was the first game on Steam, which is a pretty revelatory moment. So I loved Half-Life 2. I loved the episodes. And if you recall, the episodes were originally planned. Episode 1 was originally planned. Oh, we're going to do these smaller games, and they're going to take 6 months, and we're going to put them out, and it's going to be great. And then Episode 2 came out, and it's that happened, and then it ended on a horrible cliffhanger.
10 years to learn about the history of the Half-Life franchise, people.
So... I just wanted to bring you up to speed and like my affinity for this. Like, I was super jazzed when I heard that this was happening, even though I realized people might not be. Now, all that being said, the second that you start this game, the very first thing you are doing is standing on a balcony overlooking the streets of City 17, which is like the typical, you know, Half-Life 2 setting. It's like a European style, like quarantine zone kind of setting with alien ships flying overhead and all that stuff. And that moment alone was just like, I'm like in this universe. And then once you realize that you have like a lot of control in terms of not only what you can do with the objects around you, you could pick up stuff and throw it and put it on your head or whatever. Just the fact that you can go anywhere. So, you know, within reason, there, you know, it's not locked to like specific areas that you can go to. You have essentially complete control, which really lets you play it as like a legit shooter rather than it being like, well, here's this rail, very strict setting that is like kind of typical in VR shooter games, like even Superhot. You know, you're essentially locked to individual spots while you're playing.
That's two completely different genres.
I love Superhot, don't get me wrong. But it is worth noting, like, there are pretty significant differences in how these two games play.
It feels like a complete world.
It feels like a complete world. I felt, unlike any other VR experience I've ever had, or really any very many video game experience I've ever had, I feel completely immersed in this world. It is a living, breathing, grounded, despite the aliens, grounded world. And that is, like, super empowering and also terrifying and also exciting and everything about video games. So it really has been, I think, a really exciting thing for me.
Yeah, and for me, what I love about it is the pace. I mean, this is not a Half-Life game at all. It has the characters of it. It has the world of it. You can do, like, physics. But in terms of, like, it is not a shooter in the sense that Half-Life, especially Half-Life 1, and really Half-Life 2 in the episodes are. A really intense combat scenario for the first 3 or 4 hours is one thing is in the room and it's terrifying, or it is navigating a dark corridor that has the where the things with the long tongues are that pull you up towards the ceiling. When you finally do actually face off against the Combine, which are the more human like enemies, it'll be two of them. And they're like across, you know, a train track, and you're like picking them off. What I loved about it was that it did force me to actually slow down. There was a moment where I was in a train car, and I think a lot of people probably had a similar experience who played this game, where there are Combine waiting outside, and I died the first time it happened because they just kept just peppering me with bullets, and I realized like I need to kneel down. I just need to kneel to hide behind the wall. And then I bashed out the window with my gun and then kind of blind fired, which got them running. And then when they were running, I like looked back up, looked out through the window, put my hand out the window and started firing to like hit them as they were running to get inside of the train car. And like that feeling of, oh, you know, fighting two people in any other game would just be like, whatever, I pop out of cover and I just shoot them. And like I take the bullets. Where in this game, I was thinking about strategy. That's like I don't know what have I seen in a movie. Like how do people respond to these like combat scenarios? And that level of role playing is so fun when it really clicks.
Yeah, I do want to real quick just address something that Plant said because I think people kind of forget because they view Half-Life 1. I agree with you. Is a traditional predominantly an action game. But people forget that Half-Life 2 and the episodes are are like half action games and half like physics puzzle games, because they physics was the identifying characteristic of those games. And I do think they carry through that in this, where there are puzzles where there's like a crank and you have to like pull out of the spokes of a wheel to actually be able to crank it. Like I think they wear both of those hats really well.
Justin, I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, I was fully bought in on it's weird. I was fully bought in on the stuff Russ is talking about. The interactions in the world all feel cool. Like walking around the world is really neat. The when you see a tantalizing glimpse of an open world of City 17 before it jams you into a hallways from which you'll never emerge. It is very compelling. I don't know what you saying that it is an open and you can go wherever you want is honestly the craziest thing I've ever heard anybody say. I don't know what you're talking about. You're literally going from A to B and you're led the entire way.
No, I mean, I don't mean it's an open world game. I mean, like, in the way, like,
do you mean
can
like
walk.
Locomotion literally in the space?
Yeah, in the space.
Oh,
the
okay,
space.
Okay.
That and also visual sense. Design that, you know, it's like, I love Super Hot. It's a series of white corridors that you flash between stages.
But that's,
right?
but there are VR games that are open, like, they are more like Half-Life 2 in being like a large open world that you have complete freedom to kind of explore. So I don't know that this is like necessarily shifting the paradigm.
I like the physics puzzles, especially like the literal puzzles. There's some of you little ones that you use to like unlock doors and stuff that are actually really cool. You're like manipulating a globe with one hand and trying to line up icons and stuff. That stuff's cool. Where it really fell apart for me and where I eventually was just like, I'm not doing this anymore. I just think the encounters, they're in trying to integrate the VR components, I feel like they've made like encounters much less enjoyable. And I know they're supposed to be like stressful. I just found them irritating.
Sure.
One example is like the pistol holds X number of bullets. If you drop your clip to reload, you lose those bullets. Mm-hmm. Bullets are extremely scarce. So you don't want to do that. So you end up in a lot of scenarios where you'll start an encounter and then have to go through the like, I mean, it's 10 seconds, but you feel them. They're long 10 to like reload your gun by dropping the clip out, reaching behind you and taking a clip and jamming it in, which I like in theory.
Sure.
I just feel like it makes the combat encounters a lot less enjoyable. There's also stuff like,
can I just talk about the clip thing real quick just before
you please
move on? I've played a few like real quote unquote realistic shooters that do this where you lose the ammo if you go to reload. If you haven't fired off all your bullets, you just lose whatever was in the clip. And in every other scenario, I've always found it to be a major pain in the ass. In this scenario, the very cool thing about this that I realize is not for everyone, but for me, what I found myself doing was, okay, I'm going down a hallway. There might be an encounter coming up. I literally look down at my clip and I see I've got 3 shots left in this clip. And I'm thinking to myself, am I going to make a decision right now where I lose these 3 shots forever?
To not have to do a full clip reload.
Yeah. And I think those decisions are like really interesting just from a game design standpoint. Like it's interesting to force the player to like decide between those two choices.
Yeah, it's not. I think there's absolutely merit to that. If it felt better in the moment, like if I felt like I had a lot more control over one is placement. You can teleport in this game. In fact, I think it's the main way you know, I
it's
think
it's
the
default
method.
Yeah.
Method of moving around. That's a really weird fit for like a survival horror vibe that a lot of this game is going for, where you don't know if someone can get to you or not, or if you can just like teleport past an enemy. There was a lot of that felt really weird where I'd like run up to try to drop a gas canister or something and it like have to, you know, chunk my way back around. It just felt weird and bad. The tentacles, especially from the ceiling, like not knowing so irritating to know if I was going to be stepping into one or not, or trying to like work my way around, and I'd get caught up on them enough times where it just felt annoying. Like I don't know, the any of the combat stuff for me just like really drove me away. And when it takes you into like a more narrative thing, I found it really cool.
Like talking to other characters, you mean?
Well, like there's bits of interstitial dialogue between you and
Russell,
and then the one bit where you, I don't know how to talk about it without, but where right before you get the head crab to eat,
Yes. Okay. That character is fantastic.
So that's like cool as hell. Like being in the world and not having to worry about like shooting people is great. You know what I think it is? I think that the stress of being in VR and the stress of survival horror mechanics for me, just the two cancel each other out. Like they're two different kinds of stress that didn't like gel for me.
Well, I guess it's the best way. It's just not scary. It wasn't scary. Like, and so it, I don't think it was necessarily successful as a survival horror game. For me, it felt like they were making a Half-Life game in the vein of the Half-Life games, which were more sort of, you know, shooter focused with scary moments, but not, I would not call Half-Life 2 a survival horror game.
Sure.
But then they realized like, this isn't working, but there is a scarcity to the resources here that maybe we could kind of pitch it as a survival horror game. And that's fine. But like, there's way too much repetition to be scary. The third hallway full of barnacles with their hanging tongues,
yes,
that I came across, I was like, okay, I get it. And I'm on like chapter five or so right now.
Without spoiling anything, you're past like the flashlight sequence.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you didn't find that.
No, because even in the dark, when you have a flashlight and you have a few bullets, you're facing off against zombies with a head crab on them. Sometimes the head crabs have armor plating, and sometimes the head crabs fall down and are alive. And sometimes the head crabs are stronger than usual. It's like fear is predicated on the unknown, and very quickly, like, I knew what this game had. And that's not me like decrying the whole game as a failure, but it's not like there has to be some element of fear.
I want to talk about the flashlight sequence, because it's like my favorite thing that I've played in forever. So the way that this sequence works is like you learn all the basics of the video game, right? Like you learn how to do the reloading ammo. There's a kind of like the game's equivalent of the gravity gun, where your hand can attract objects to it. Collect ammo, or there's these resources that you can collect that are scattered throughout the environment. You've learned all the basics. You've learned how to shoot a few things. Then you go into a pit, and there is a body hanging upside down that has a flashlight on its chest. You rip the flashlight off. You attach it to your whatever hand you're not using your gun in, effectively. So you have your gun on one hand. You have the flashlight on the other. The instinct here is that you now have to hold your left hand under your right hand.
You got to Jack Bauer it.
Yeah, Jack Bauer it. The problem is, if you're also looking for resources, you have to use that other hand to then kind of scan for resources. So now it's no longer working quite as well. And things start blurring as to like what is what, which can be annoying. I'm not surprised if people think this is annoying, but I really loved it. You would go into one room that is under construction, and the scaffolding in the room looks almost identical to the tongues of the monsters that are on the ceiling. So you're like skimming the room to see like what is what. There's a point where one of those tongue monsters picks up an exploding barrel, and there is a headcrab monster coming from right behind it. And the question is like, okay, well, what do I do? This room's full of explosives altogether. Do I take out the thing that is on the ceiling so it drops the explosive barrel? If I let it go too long, is it going to blow up the entire room? Like, I just felt such tension there. And it's also gorgeous. There's a part of, with the flashlight, there are kind of like living, I don't know, like fungi on the walls that in dark are bioluminescent, but when you shine a light on them, they look separate. So if you skim the light across, like you see them as like a soft yellow or whatever in the corner, and you skim your light on it, and they look entirely different, because you're actually seeing inside of their bodies with the bioluminescence. And like those touches, the whole time I was just completely blown away by it.
I gotta say, also about resource management, this is personal, but I feel like if you're going to severely limit bullets, you gotta have a good melee option.
That's my big thing with the game. I think
I probably would enjoy all of it more if I'm like, you know what, I can save my bullets. I can handle this one guy without. And it's like I'll give you, when you get the, you get a shotgun and you get the guys walking around with the head crabs on their faces, there's a very satisfying like one shot. You get close enough to him, you risk the danger of getting close enough to him, right? And you take the shotgun shot and you blow the head crab off their face and they go down. Awesome. Then you have to let, the head crab is fine. So you have to switch to your smaller gun and then annoyingly shoot the head crab three times. It's like, How is that enjoyable?
Right.
Head crabs have always been garbage. Give me a fucking crowbar or something. Mix it up. Make it a fucking pry bar. Make it a wonder bar.
A very quick point, and then I really want to hand this off to Griffin because I know he has a lot of feelings about this in Boneworks. But something that I love about this game is everything that I and Fresh like about it, I think are what y'all don't like, and everything you don't like are what I love. Like that like having to like quick switch to the pistol and like ice a thing like on the ground before it has a chance to like roll over and attack me was amazing to me. Which is I just think that's I don't know if we've come across many games like that where things that are like just the negatives for half of us are the positives and likewise. Like I just think that's strange.
It reads as like inconsistency, and that is like the biggest, most disappointing thing, right? You talk about Half-Life 2 being this like physics like reinvention, like you talk about Half-Life 2 being this checkpoint in the development of like 3D gaming, of that they changed everything with that game, and that's a huge part of Valve's like whole ethos, and it's the reason we haven't gotten Half-Life 3 is because they've said, like, you know, we don't want to just make another Half-Life game. We don't want to just make another shooter. Like, we want it to change shit. And I do not think that Half-Life Alyx pulls that off. I think that it has done a lot of stuff to make... I think there's been a lot of consideration put into it to make it a game that people... it is a more comfortable VR game to play.
Sure.
Comfort is, like, an actual sort of, like, measurement of VR games. And I know this is something that Russ struggles with, and it's not a read on Russ, but, like... you move very fucking slowly in this game. Even if you use the movement stick option like a regular shooter, which is what I used, you move very, very, very slowly. You
fall. Probably move slower if you're walking, right? Because teleporting...
So eventually I just got to the point where I was like, boop, teleport, 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 right, teleport, right. teleport. Yep. You also fall very slowly, which is like wild. It's wild to me.
How do you fall?
You can fall. You can walk off an edge of a thing. There is there's a moment in the game where you're reaching out for someone's hand as they're hanging from a cable.
Okay.
And it's during like a cutscene sort of thing. So when you're reaching out, you're on the edge of this bridge and there's no railing, but you can't go over. There's like an invisible wall keeping you from going over. So I'm reaching out for this guy's hand, trying to grab him. And then he falls. Oh, no. But then he's saved at the last second. And at some point during that cutscene, after he falls, the invisible wall just disappears. So I'm reaching out for this dude's hand, and I look up, and he's saved. And they're talking to me like, okay, you have to get to the vault. And I'm like, uh-huh, uh-huh. And my finger accidentally nudges the button. And my point of view just goes, boop. And I fall very slowly like Mary Poppins. And then the screen goes dark. And I hear Russell like, Alyx, Alyx. I'm like, did I just fucking die? And it's like, all the work that you put into making it, like you can pick up a bucket and catch a head crab in it. Like all of that work that you put into... like the physical realism of this world, that consistency, like for me, shatters in a case like that, or a case like there's little things too. Like you pick up an open can, right? And then you pick up like, I don't know, a screwdriver or something. And you think like, oh, I'm going to put this screwdriver in this can. But like the top of it is like an invisible shield is on there so that it doesn't actually interact like a certain object. Doors are a fucking crapshoot. If anybody else on this call can tell me what happens when you get to the top of a ladder. Like, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. You climb to the top of a ladder, and then you just kind of wait there, and then you teleport up, and now you're on top of the ladder. Wait, you mentioned Boneworks, and, like,
I didn't have the issue with a ladder. I don't know what
I can get
opening the doors is garbage. You're like, why do I have to get out of the way of... I have to get out of the way of the pretend door in my house.
I agree with the door.
I own this building that I'm in.
So, like...
Right? This is my home. This door is fucking pretend.
Yes.
I shouldn't have to move my physical meat carapace around to get around an imaginary pretend door. It sucks. You know what I want to do? I want to open the fucking door.
I don't want to mire this. We've gone long already, so like I don't want to mire this whole conversation and like being VR snobby, but like I've played a lot at this point. I played Boneworks earlier this year, and it blew me the fuck away because that did for me, that invented a framework for physical interactions in a VR space in a way that that Half-Life 2 did and that I thought Half-Life Alyx would. In Boneworks, you can climb up onto like any ledge if you can get your hand up over it, and you can like somehow physically pull yourself up and like pull your... there's a button to like crouch and pull your legs up. You literally have to go through the motions to do that. In Half-Life Alyx, you put your hands on the rungs of the ladder and then you get to the top and then you just kind of boop up to the top. And it's like these are minor arguments, but it's the kind of thing that when you are trying to create like a tangible, real feeling world, that it is a failing, and enough of those add up to sort of like shatter it for me. And I eventually wanted to know that I wasn't being an asshole about this, and I went back and replayed some of Boneworks, and it's just night and day. Also in Boneworks, like, there's a million different weapons, there is physical combat. In Half-Life Alyx, when you like pull the pipe out of the door, mm-hmm. and then there's a zombie there, and then I swung the pipe at him and it just kind of like went through him, like, yeah. I was like, I don't know that I'm going to be into this. This is fucking Half-Life, and I can't hit a thing with a crowbar-shaped object.
I would say this, though, about Boneworks specifically, and I appreciate the, like, level of that realism that you're talking about. 100% accurate. They put, like, so much effort into making Boneworks. Like, everything you pick up, you can pry things off the walls and, like, use all sorts of physics.
You can stab a thing into a thing, and then when you try to pull it out, 100%. Like, you feel the resistance. Like, yeah.
I think there is an element, and this runs through all of Valve's stuff, where they pull punches in the name of, as you said, accessibility, comfort, and stuff like that. So the reason you can't necessarily, why they didn't design it to have that much, like, infinite possibility, I think was in the name of accessibility. Now, that doesn't excuse things like, I agree with you. I think you should be able to bash something with a pipe or stab something with a knife in this game. I don't think there's a reason you can't. But I think predominantly, like, this was designed in the way that, like, Portal 2 was designed, as a thing that, like, everyone who puts on the helmet can play and get through it and experience it and appreciate the storyline without having to worry about nausea or mastering, like, complex, like, controls or anything like that. Because I've tried Boneworks, like, it is not an easy game to pick up. Like, it's cool when
it warns you at the front of the game, like, this is an expert level VR game.
Totally, 100%. Yeah. And I think they're just two different, like, beasts.
I think it's the difference between Disneyland and, like, a paintball park. Like, like, a ton of money went into this very linear but incredibly purposeful world. You feel like you're in the experience, but there's not a whole lot you can do outside of what they demand of you versus... Mm-hmm. Something like Boneworks, where it's like, I don't know, man. Like, it's like a renegade paintball park where they're like, you bring your own gear, we don't care. You know, we've set up some obstacles. If you end up killing each other, can you call 911? Because we don't own a phone.
I don't want to be an asshole again, but actually Boneworks has a fucking cool story with, like,
it's better in every way. I mean, the story, the tone is more consistent than Half-Life.
And, like, you can talk about, like, Half-Life, they've designed it to be accessible. That's fine, but, like, that physical, being able to hit something with a thing and have it hurt that thing, that's not an accessibility thing. That's like a, we couldn't figure out how to make melee combat feel good, so there just isn't any. Also, if you're not going to have melee combat in the game, the gunplay should be fun. And, like, in this game, I'm very deep in it now, and I have shotgun and I have pistol. And so when I'm walking around the world, I find shotgun ammo, pistol ammo, or these little resin spheres that you need fucking 50 of in order to, like, make your gun a little bit better. Or sometimes there's a little canister with a worm that gets gooshed up, and then you inject that right into your hand, I guess?
Yeah.
Pretty cool city that you have going on there. It is an accessible game. It is, I would, you know, there's no argument there. It is more accessible than Boneworks, but it can also be accessible and still be fun and feel good. Fun. And I think the reason that I have a this is so wild for me is it is another sort of instance that I've had so many times in the past couple of years where, like, this game's getting tens across the board. And I'm like, I just don't get it, man. I don't get it.
I think we can all agree, though, ahead of our B section, Half-Life Alyx, 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. It's settled. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back with more video games. That's our thing. It's our whole thing. I feel frustrated talking about this VR stuff. I feel like we're still developing a vocabulary. There's, like, a weird gulf that I feel like we don't have the words to, like, express, like, why it is or isn't working for individual people. It's weird to talk about.
Yeah, I think it's super early still.
There's a new box next to fun factor, and it's like it's like stab factor, the stab realism quotient.
Honestly, if they cut the ceiling things, I'd probably go up 2 points. I think it's so irritating. So hey, we wanted to talk about franchises. Let me frame it. Half-Life has been long dormant for a decade or so, And then it came back from the dead. And we thought we'd go around the table and talk about games that we'd love to see, franchises that we'd love to see make a big comeback.
Okay.
Long past due.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, the computer had the library computer had two games installed on it. Oregon Trail, but like an old version that didn't really run as well. And the other one was Snood. Now, I don't know how many people remember Snood.
Snood.
Snood was a bubble, what was it, Puzzle Bobble, or like one of those types of games where you match three and you shoot goofy aliens.
It's just like you thought that our Half-Life discussion wasn't going to be alienating enough to our younger listeners. So you're like, Snood, let me swing Snood, in here Snood. With some Snood.
Now, who am I? I'm not a game designer. I can't tell you how to update Snood, but there's got to be a way to do it. And I honestly think there's a demand for it, whether it's on mobile, whether it's a VR experience, whether it's, I mean, I think we could do like a mashup, Half-Life Snood mashup. They did a Peggle mashup with Half-Life. What's stopping them from doing Snood?
A Snood Half-Life. Yeah. By the way, Russ, did you know, great news if you didn't know this, there was a Snood 2 that came out on Nintendo DS in 2005, and it is called Snood 2, On Vacation. So you can just go play that if you wanted to.
Wait. They were working before?
It's what?
In Snood 1, they were like
yeah,
working?
Man, that was their office.
That's a fucking job, is they got to shoot themselves at other ones of themselves of the same color so that they can finally die. And then they get paid, I guess?
Wow. I want that job. That's fun.
It's like you don't even know about the economy.
I guess I don't.
Griffin, what about you?
Mine is a fighting game that I did not realize how much I missed it until one Chris Plant had some folks over to his place to play an evening's worth of it. And that game is Bushido Blade. That franchise is Bushido Blade. What did we play? Bushido Blade 2? Is that what we dipped
Choose
into?
Two is
shit hot. It's got like so many weapons and things like that. I just like... I like fighting games conceptually, like a whole lot, but I don't like playing them for the most part, just because like I will buy a stick and buy the game that everybody's talking about and try and play it and then just realize like, I'm shitty at this. And this is like it uses a type of, you know, gaming language that I just don't understand. The matches take so long, and I want Bushido Blade is just like you fucking run at each other, and there's a moment or two of precision required, and then like someone is like their arm has been chopped off.
It's the one hit kill fighting game. Correct?
The one hit kill fighting game is shit hot. Obviously, I guess Dive Kick is the spiritual successor, but I want something obviously a little bit beefier than that. Shout out though to Deadliest Warrior, the licensed fighting game that came
one
out. One and two, yeah, they're both fucking fun. They
are they? Wow.
Based on the, what, USA TV show or something like that?
Yeah.
I remember playing that at a convention. Like, I got, like, I think it was 505 Games or something like that. I, like, got an appointment that I was, like, not so psyched for. And then these dudes, like, had me play the Deadliest Warrior game. And I was like, yo, hey, is this Bushido Blade? And they're like, yeah, man, we made a Bushido Blade. And I was like, what? Yeah.
Nobody told us we couldn't, so we just did it.
Yeah, do they explain away the, like, this guy has an assault rifle, this guy has, like, a pole axe?
Oh, no, I mean, it was all, like, melee. It was all melee weapons. Yeah, I mean, that's a fun formula for a game. I'm, like, amazed that there are not more of it.
Let me do mine real quick, because it's genius. Fucking listen.
Uh-huh.
I want to say, hold on. I want to get the video chat window back up so I can see your guys' faces.
Mm.
Dino Crisis VR.
I mean, how is it different from Dino Crisis?
The scale. Because
it's in VR,
it's in
you
fucking VR.
Fucking idiot. Didn't you hear the two letters I said after Dino Crisis?
Yeah, okay.
The real answer of my heart would be Legacy of Kain.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about, I mean, Legacy of Kain is a franchise that, like, there's very little affinity for. They actually tried to do random, like a...
Oh, Bud Nosgoth? You don't love Nosgoth. What? You're not still playing Nosgoth?
Which should have worked. But I'd love to see the Legacy of Kain franchise come back. It's weird that it hasn't. But I feel like I was thinking about that, like the Resident Evil remakes that we get and then they put in VR. But like the idea of like doing a survival horror game and being able to live out like the like hiding in a cupboard from a dinosaur that's walking around the room with you, it would be good as hell.
Oh, yeah.
That'd
I was thinking really Dino Crisis is the light gun game, but I guess not.
No. It's the Resident Evil, but instead of zombies, dinosaurs.
Got it.
I'm just going to spam you with a few because Bushido Blade was my option. And
oh,
Griffin
did I steal
yours?
I'm sorry.
And it's the best option. But here are some things that I would like to see come back. Chibi Robot. Where's it at?
Oh, yeah.
Mario Golf. Camelot. Oh. New Mario Golf. Where's that trying at? And not making good ones.
But
it was like 2014 was the last time we got one. Here's the big one that will never happen. WWE All-Stars. The THQ Xbox 360 generation wrestling game in which you can fly 40 feet into the air as your created wrestler and just absolutely dunk a mega juiced Hulk Hogan through the floor. Why can I not do that every generation of video games? And then like a very easy one is SSX, but controversial take, a sequel to the Xbox 360 era game. Which I love. I'm the only person on the planet.
Oh, what?
Just the reboot? Oh, I loved it. It's so good.
I would do Tricky, which is the only one that deserves rebooting or remaking.
Yeah, Tricky is tremendous. It's no Steep, though.
We have a few minutes, I guess, to talk about what else we've been playing. And I know Chris and I have been dipping into Persona 5 The Royal. Do you have any salient thoughts about it? I just finished the first dungeon, so you may be further than I am.
I really wish I had more to offer other than more Persona 5 is good and how nice it is to revisit this game, especially right now. I think Persona, ever since I got into it, is kind of like Animal Crossing for me in that it is a perfect escape game. It just feels like you get to visit somewhere nice where things are chill. You go outside and there are like hundreds of people and everything is like... cool. So I don't have a whole lot to say about like what's new here. I'm sure you can probably speak to that better than I can, but I would say that if you were hesitant about Persona and you've been thinking about giving it a try, now is a great time to get into a 140-hour JRPG that is really accommodating. I mean, this is the friendliest, I think, JRPG, barring, you know, we'll see how the Final Fantasy VII remake is. Yeah. I'm sure that will be pretty friendly too.
I think it's pretty great. I had some issues with Persona 5 just because in comparison to Persona 4, like I love the tone and the setting of that game a whole lot more. Like I love the sort of chill, rural, slow-paced vibe. Yeah. And like the aesthetic of Persona 5, I think is like pretty, pretty solid, and they've done like a really good job of fleshing that out, but it just didn't like hit for me as well. And I don't know that necessarily Persona 5 like fixes a lot of that stuff. Like as far as I can tell, the localization hasn't been changed, and there was some rough spots in said localization, and like the characters are still like not my favorite characters. But my feelings about Persona 5 were that like the gameplay itself was so fucking fun and so much better than Persona 4 was, and that is where, from what I've played so far, like where most of the emphasis has gone. There's just so much cool shit with the combat that has been added. There are like exploding enemies now that you'll run into where if you hit them and knock them out in one shot, they'll explode and hurt like everybody else in the party. So now like the battles are even more of a puzzle to like figure out how to like baton pass and like get everything going without the enemies taking a single turn. And there's like challenge fights where you go for a high score, like just trying to keep your chain going like that. They've done like a ton of smart stuff gameplay wise. And maybe we'll have like more to talk about like once we've played a little bit more, because so far that's like all I've seen. But I think most of like the new story stuff and character development stuff and writing stuff, which is like what I want out of this, comes later because they've added like a whole nother semester to the game and they've added a whole nother character who I've only had sort of glancing interactions with. What Chris said, if you've never played a Persona game, like Persona 5 The Royal it seems like a pretty good place to start. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna get your money's worth, it seems like.
A lot of reading
sure, but I mean it's a JRPG. If you don't want to read, don't play it. That's a good, thank you Russ for pointing that out.
You're welcome.
Sometimes you don't like things and then you shouldn't do those things if you don't like them. So like if Agreed. The oven Great is point. If the stovetop is on and it's hot, don't put your hand on it. This is a PSA from Russ Frushtick. If there's a type of, say you don't like eating broccoli, then don't eat the broccoli. And this is just more wisdom from Russ Frushtick.
Probably eat broccoli whether you like it.
You should
or
eat broccoli. It's got iron and shit.
Juice, are you buying anything?
No, not really. Boneworks is very good. We just kind of glanced off it, but I completely missed it. It's really good. Like, if you want to play something, I'm not comparing it to Half-Life currently, but just taking on its own merits, is this really genius idea of putting the VR aspects of it at the absolute forefront, and tonally, it's fantastic. It feels like
you still can't teleport, right?
No,
can't teleport. There's a I will say that it is a little bit of a shame that, something this cool is like hampered by the fact that like I got nauseous playing it, and I don't ever get nauseous in VR ever. And this is a nigh universal experience. The Steam forums are equally split between people saying this made me sick and I've never been sick.
Yeah,
and people saying, no, it didn't.
Yeah. Just try
it. It didn't make me sick.
The game opens up with a museum of VR innovations, like showing you how to play the game. It's so fucking funny. And the first thing you see is a exhibit about teleportation, and it's a caveman with a spear, like a robot caveman, like hunting a tiger, like teleporting forwards. And a little voice is like, in the past, we were restricted to short form teleportation.
That shit. Enough for hysterical. You're such assholes, guys. The fact of the matter is, there's a reason teleportation is a thing, because most people can't play your game.
But those
like,
who can.
If 50% of people are getting nauseous playing your game, there's a reason teleportation exists. They're like ignoring the reason for it to even be.
I think the reason also the Half-Life comparisons come up so much is that there are head crabs in these games, but in Boneworks, but it's a VR helmet with sentient legs that jumps on you and tries to pull itself over your head so that it traps you in a virtual environment, which is a fucking cool idea. But also you can grab them out of the air and like grab another one and slam them together until they die. And,
I just want to be able to do that stuff. Like, why can't I do that stuff and ignore the walking parts? Like, that's what I don't understand.
I think that's completely fair. Yes. I'm not stringent about this. I'm just saying I wish it didn't make me sick either. I don't like puking all over my floor. Someone should come clean this up. No one will come. Plant, you have anything?
Yeah, I have a few reader submissions. I asked for feedback on Half-Life in VR from Alex Murphy. What?
Probably from not. Alex.
No, it's a different last name.
I always thought of VR as an isolating activity, but playing Job Simulator drunk in front of a group of friends felt strangely like doing a solo improv performance. Loved it. And from @Slifferjam. My cat Angus wanted to play with the dangling wrist straps on my controllers and decided to jump at them just as a headcrab leaped at me. I just about threw him. I'm not sure how Valve trained my cat to make Alex more immersive and make sure he's out of the room while I play now. I feel like that I've heard that a version of that anecdote from many people, that pets are the most dangerous thing to have in your house while playing VR.
Yeah,
well, or a three-year-old, I would also argue is not the best, but yeah. I mean, yeah.
My wife scared the living fuck out of me yesterday while I was playing Half-Life Alyx, so yeah, it really doesn't matter who it is.
We all have to go to the bathroom so bad, so this is the end of the show. Next week, yeah, we all go together. We have a four-hole tour. next week, we're going to talk about Resident Evil 3, so any specific prompts, Russ? Anything you'd like to hear from people?
I've never played it. I've never played that one.
I'd love to know the most underappreciated Resident Evil game, because there are a lot
that's
to
a good
pull
one.
From.
There's a lot.
And a justification.
We would ask that you follow and listen for free on Spotify. If you want to share the show, you can use the link besties.fan. You can email us mail@besties.fan.
And you can follow us on Twitter @thebestiespod. Yeah. If you want to join our mailing list, where you'll be the first to learn about what we're doing in future episodes and any merch, you can join that. It is the pinned tweet on the Twitter feed.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to follow us for free on Spotify, as I said before, and be sure to join us again next time for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Is a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter, and our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!